Okay, this is talking with Dr. Zoltan Bey at his home in Chevy Chase, Maryland, on 1st of October, 1980. Before we get to World War II and your experiments, could you tell me about your background, especially your education and what your training was and what you were doing before World War II?
Well, I was born in Hungary in 1900, and I went to the Hungarian schools and the Hungarian university in Budapest, and I became a physicist there. Now, since at that time, the equipment, the scientific equipment of the Budapest University was rather poor. Then I was sent by the Hungarian state with a scholarship to Berlin.
I see.
And so I was a so-called Gastarbeiter.
Right.
Which
yes.
means...
guest worker, right.
Guest worker. Yes. At the Physikalische Technische Reichsanstalt, mm-hmm. where I made spectroscopic studies. And later I went over to the University of Berlin, where in the Institute of Professor Bodenstein, mm-hmm. I made research about the active gases.
This would be in the late 1920s?
That was between 1926 and 30.
Right.
And so I was very successful with one experiment of mine on a spectroscopic basis. I could prove that the active nitrogen contained free nitrogen atoms.
I see.
That was a very good result at mm-hmm. that time, because everybody, the Americans, the Germans, and French, all people, and the English, were interested, what is active nitrogen?
I see.
And so this little experiment, which proved experimentally and on a spectroscopic way that the active nitrogen contained free nitrogen atoms,
right.
was something very good, a very good result.
Right.
And so that was the reason why I was then invited by the back to Hungary by the Hungarian government mm-hmm. to occupy their chair of, at a university.
Right, in physics.
In physics.
Right.
And that was in Szeged, which is the second largest town mm-hmm. Of Hungary. And so I did continue my research there. And then later on, I came to Budapest.
Yes.
A chair for the atomic physics was mm-hmm. established, and I was the first occupant of that chair.
What year was that now?
That was in 1936.
Mm-hmm.
In between 1930 and 1936, I was in that second largest town in Szeged.
Right.
So then I came to Budapest, and also I was leader or director of a big laboratory which was kept up by the Tungsram, the United Incandescent Lamp.
Right, that's mentioned in here also.
That's right, it's the same. That was the biggest research laboratory of Hungary
that's
at
the,
that time.
The General Electric of Hungary?
It is the same,
right.
Something similar like the General Electric plus AT&T.
I see, okay.
So
And you were simultaneously a professor at the university
working at the Tungsram laboratory.
Right, and what were the main problems that you were working on at the...
Now, the main problems at that time were, since I was very much interested in do some atomic experiments, and atomic counting, I came to the idea that all the so-called Geiger-Müller counters are rather slow.
Yes.
Because they make a count in about 1 microsecond, and that is slow. That's a long time in atomic physics. So I figured out that if we, instead of an ion avalanche in the counter, we could use a secondary electron avalanche in a multiplier.
Oh, I see.
So then I introduced for atomic counting the electron multipliers.
I see.
Actually, that is still the fastest counting in atomic physics still today.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that two of my original electronic secondary electron counter tubes are now on an exhibition here in the Museum of History
And Technology.
Technology.
And here in Washington, D.C.?
Yes, here in Washington.
Oh, that's interesting. Hmm.
Yeah.
And this was in the late 30s that you were working on?
That was in 1938. Mm-hmm. I published my first paper about that new type of counting.
Right.
And so then this increased the speed of the counting from the microsecond to the nanosecond.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was also able, since at Tungsram the best radio research and tubes were available, I also was able to build coincident circuits, which then could respond in the nanosecond times.
Right.
And so that was the situation when the Second World War broke out.
In 39.
In 39, yes.
Right.
In Hungary, actually, only in 1940 or 41. We were outside until that time. We could manage to be outside. But when Hitler then attacked Russia, then Hungary couldn't help anymore.
Right.
And he was then it was also then dragged into the war.
Right.
So then at that time, at the end of 1941, the Hungarian government decided that Hungary can now be subject of air raids, air raids.
Right.
And therefore we need something which we heard already about, but we didn't know what it was, actually, which was called radio locator.
Right, right.
The radar
yes.
name came later. Well, anyways, and we also knew that there was also some German research, but the Allies have been superior.
Right.
In that type of research.
And of course it was all highly secret.
And it was very secret, yeah. Now, then the Hungarian government then instructed me to work out the Hungarian radar.
I
they
see.
Didn't ask me how I could do it. Or
just work it out.
Just work it out. You know how it is.
But now, what was the relationship between the Hungarian government and the Germans? The Germans had to approve anything they did, I suppose.
Well, now, we, the Hungarian, the Hungary, I mean, was an ally of Germany. But the situation between the Hungarian government and the German government was never on a trusted basis.
Mm-hmm.
So then it happened that when the Hungarian army asked the Germans to give information to that research group
right.
which I led at
right.
that time, then they just denied it.
Mm-hmm.
And so no trick helped. They even wanted to make me a colonel of the Hungarian army, and then sent over to Germany, but nothing helped. And so finally we had to start from scratch.
I see.
And then I took the best people in Hungary, mm-hmm. about a dozen of them, who were radio engineers,
right.
And also some theoretical physicists,
right.
Because we had to start really from scratch and work it out, mm-hmm. from the Fourier expansions, right. of the impulses.
Right.
And everything we had to work out ourselves. But I should tell you that in about 2 years we already achieved something. So
what period would this be exactly now? Which 2 years?
Well, we started at the beginning of 1942.
Mm-hmm.
And at the beginning of 1944 we already had a Hungarian radar, which was mounted on some mountains in around Budapest.
Yes.
And so later on, when in the summer of 1944, the Allied airplanes came,
mm-hmm.
And attacked Hungary, we already had that radar information and the radar detection,
right.
of them.
Was this radar of use in these air raids?
Yeah.
It was operational in the sense.
It was operational.
In a military sense.
One part of it, not everything. It was.
But it gave some warning anyway.
It was a rather long wave still at that, mm-hmm. time. It was 2.5 meters,
mm-hmm.
but we already worked on a 1.5 meter radar, and that's when my moon experiment comes in,
right.
to the picture, because after working out this 0.5 meter radar, then I got the idea that now we can try and do something basic physics.
Now, you said it was a 2.5 meter radar,
Which was operational,
right.
for the Hungarian army.
Right, but you had a 0.5 meter radar, which
was
experimental. But a
0.5 meter radar was already under development.
I see. And and going to the higher frequency gave you the idea that you could do some,
right.
other things.
Yes, yes.
But had you always had an interest in astronomy, or what?
I always had from my childhood. I always had interest in astronomy. And I even can tell you a little thing. When I was a child, I lived in the country where we lived very close to a church tower.
Yes.
And so in the yard, at the evening times, I always looked at the moon when it walked over the church tower.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was fascinated and thought that now if I could climb up to the church tower, I probably could touch the moon. And that was the very idea later, that we touched the moon, not by hand.
That's right.
But just increasing.
Well, that's what you say right at the end of your article, is that... essentially that you've touched the moon. Let's see, how do you put it here?
Yeah.
You use the word touch.
Yeah.
A pencil of electromagnetic waves.
Right.
And also, while we're here, let me just ask you, you bring in this thing about confirming the validity of the Copernican view, which I thought was a rather interesting philosophical note to add to this whole technical article.
Yeah.
did you have some reason to think that... that someone else was against the Copernican view, or
no, I wouldn't mean that, but I think no matter how nice theories are, you still need an experimental confirmation.
Right,
and that's what I was thinking about when,
right.
I said that now the Copernican U is actually confirmed, because otherwise somebody could put us into a big into a big what the name of those where you where they project planetarium.
Yeah, planetarium. Yes.
Into right. A big planetarium, and just deceive mm-hmm. us
yeah.
that we see the moon and the distances, but now we can prove that we are not deceived.
It's a very big planetarium anyway. Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Let's go back to. So you'd had this interest in astronomy. You had this equipment.
I had. Yeah.
You obviously had worked out range equations and all this kind of
yes.
thing.
Yes. Then we sat down and calculated and made the calculations for several weeks, and it came out that we are not able to do it. That we will not be able to do to apply such a big energy or power. Mm-hmm. Which would need it to, right. to get to the moon.
And for the reflection coefficient of the moon, what were you using?
We took just about the same as the Earth, one-tenth yeah. or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That was not the trouble, but the trouble was that we needed at least 10 times or maybe 30 times larger power
right.
than what was available.
But let me ask you another question. This development of the radar was, you got absolutely no information through espionage or anything else about what was going
no,
on
no,
on the other side?
Absolutely.
You only had the open literature.
Yeah.
Yeah. In proceedings of the IRE and things like
yeah,
this.
Yeah, but you can imagine that during the Second World War, we didn't get...
you only had that from before World War II.
Yes.
Right.
So, from 1940 on, we didn't get
you
any
were,
periodicals.
Cut off,
no, not right. from England, not from the United States, only from Germany, but there was secrecy, of course. So, you couldn't read such things in the Society for Physics.
Right, right. Okay, so now you had this half-meter experimental radar.
Yeah.
And
then the decision was now, should we give up the moon experiment, or we could still do something. And then it was a hard time for me, I should say sleepless nights, but finally then I came up with the idea of the integration.
Mm-hmm.
Now the integration means that if you repeat the experiment many times and get back the echo, which is in individual cases below the noise level.
Right.
Now, if you take it, if you do the experiment, let's say n times, then you increase the signal n times, but you increase the noise only square root of n
right.
times. Now, translated it into a number, if you make the experiment 1,000 times, then you get the signal multiplied by 1,000, but the noise only by a square root of 1,000, which is about 30.
Right.
So you gain actually a factor of 30. And that was enough.
Right. And then the question was how to do it.
Well, then the question was only technical anymore, how to do it, because that means that we applied a rotating switch and sent out the signals to the moon. Now, there was the accumulation of the signals. That was still a question.
Right. Right.
Because in 1946, if you think back, and try to find some method at that time to keep now signals up to a time of let's say 20 minutes or 50 minutes. There was no such device or no such experiment which could do a preservation of the very, very feeble echoes
right.
for that long time.
And also in an accurate manner, of course.
And also with a linear
right.
Manner. So, and then I came to the idea of that chemical.
Had you ever used a coulometer before in your laboratory experiment?
No, I didn't think so.
So, but where did this idea come from then?
It came just from the fact that it preserves whatever it got once.
Right.
So I had to look if you think about some condensers which you charge up. At that time there were no condensers which had a time constant of half an hour.
Right. They just leak
it's
too much,
a very good insulation.
Right.
Now, later on, of course, radar astronomy did it with computers and digital conservation.
But that's not really relevant, though, what happened much later.
Not at that time.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, now, before we get to the experiment, though, I just was looking at your original paper.
Yeah.
And you say that the construction of the equipment was done actually three times.
Yes.
Can you just tell me what the first, the second, and the third time was?
Well, the first time was before the siege of Budapest. Our laboratory was taken out into the country because of the bombing.
Right.
And then...
this would be in late 44.
That was in the summer of 44.
Right.
And that's where we started, actually, that built up that experiment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in September 44, then suddenly the Russian army approached that part of the country
mm-hmm.
where our laboratory was located. And then we had to to leave very suddenly.
Right.
And so we lost part of our equipment.
Okay.
So that was
the first
time.
Right.
Okay. Now, in 1945, then, in between was the siege of Budapest, and there was absolutely no work possible. But after the siege ended, then we started again to build this equipment.
This would be in late
that was in
winter
the,
of
45? No, it was still in the spring of 45.
Okay, right.
And in about a month or so work time, we again succeeded to replace some of the lost equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And so we again wanted to start now some experiments shooting to the moon.
Right, so the whole purpose of your doing this now was aimed towards the moon experiment.
Yes,
right.
That is, military radar wasn't important anymore for us.
And why would that be? Why?
Because Hungary was already out from the war, actually defeated.
Yeah.
And occupied by the Russian army.
Okay.
So no Hungarian military activity was possible.
Okay.
And so there wasn't even a Hungarian army.
Right. But now, when you first were,
and then we wanted to start now again the moon experiment, and that was sometime in March of 45.
Right.
And then the Russian occupation finally I should say the Russian occupying powers then ordered the Tanksram, the whole factory together with the laboratory to be dismantled and taken over to Russia. Now, it was always told that that is in the context of the so-called
reparations. Right.
I don't know how it was.
Anyway, but, it happened. Right.
But it happened that we absolutely lost everything what we built before. Mm-hmm. And that was already the second time. And
but you were able to stay in Hungary yourself.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
But let me just go back to the first time, though. That was still while you were working on military things. The first time that you...
Yeah, that was...
Now, how was it that you were able to find some time for this moon experiment? It would seem like...
That's a good question, and I can answer that. I had a very intelligent person who was the connection between my working group and the Hungarian military. He was a colonel who was in charge of... helping and also
liaison
between my working group and the Hungarian military.
Right.
And then I told him that now that we came to some sort of a steel stand with our military experiments, and it is more only development work which is needed.
Rather than fundamental
research, but I think that is my experience that any development work goes much better if you have some basic fundamental tasks, because otherwise the people who are doing basic research probably get bored and uninterested in the former development.
So you were in charge of the developmental aspects also, and spent a good bit of time on all of that.
Yeah,
but you said
I could tell to that military man who was a very intelligent man that if we give to the working group some further aim that will also help in the development.
Right.
And he understood that.
Right. Can you make some estimate of what percentage of the time was able to be spent on that first attempt at the moon thing? What percentage of your time would it be at that?
Well, I worked full-time on that time.
I see.
With my research group.
On the
you
moon,
mean the moon
thing,
or the...
No, on the moon thing.
What? The moon, I would say about half.
About half.
Yeah.
For a few months, anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
But I could arrange the things that everything which was development also helped in the moon project.
Mm-hmm.
So
I
could very well make an equilibrium between the development and research.
Clearly your major interest was with the moon thing, however.
Yes,
right?
Yes, of course.
Okay, going back now to the second attempt, the Russians dismantled your your factory and the laboratory, took it away.
Yeah.
And then what do you do?
Then in that empty factory and in the empty laboratory building, we then started a new life. And we had actually some of the manufacturing machines,
mm-hmm.
which manufactured incandescent lamps.
Right.
We had actually in hiding not from the authorities, but from the bombing.
Right.
And those were not taken away by the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
So we put them together again and brought them into town from the country, And we started already in the summer of 1945.
Right.
We already started a new, very modest manufacturing program at Tangsra.
Right.
And at that time, I also started again the moon equipment to build up.
Right. Now, at this time, you're not connected with the university, or are you still connected with the university?
With the university, I was connected,
But you were not teaching at all?
Were you? Yes, we started teaching. It would be a very long time to tell.
Right, but you started teaching just as soon as the war ended, do you mean? Or even during the war?
No, in the summer.
In the summer, right.
In the summer.
But most of your effort was at the factory?
Yes.
But still, though, how did you begin to accumulate the rather sophisticated radar equipment that was going to be needed?
Well, again, we collected what was left and what was in the country to be saved from bombings. And so we could start again. And I should say I had very good people, very talented people, and very enthusiastic people who all wanted very much to achieve that aim. Mm-hmm. The aim was, as I told them, that at the very first time man is now able to do experiments in space.
Not just observations, but actual experiments.
Not just in a passive way to observe what nature offers, but go into it and do some real questions,
right,
and real experiments. And now I think that helped. And
so you were able to infect them with your own enthusiasm.
Right, yes.
They were not particularly astronomy-oriented like you. Still, though.
So then it happened that starting in the summer, I think in August 1945, we then built up the equipment, and around Christmas time we made the first shooting to the moon, and of course it took rather long time, so finally in the beginning of February, it was the first time we got some definite results.
It still seems difficult for me to believe that once your whole laboratory is gone, that you're going to be able to find the rather specialized electronic components that are needed for radar. The various tubes and so forth, they're not...
Well...
Were you able to actually manufacture those, or... Did you just put together what one would have in home radio sets?
No, we had such a big storage of incandescent lamps and radio tubes and even manufacturing machines that
you could do.
Still after the Russians took away 96% of all our equipment, the 4% still was something.
Right. Now, another question is, after the war had ended in Europe and you were more free to work on this, although you didn't have much to work with in the beginning anyway, you must have been aware that undoubtedly people in the United States and perhaps Russia would try this kind of an experiment. Did you feel an urgency to do it fast?
I always told to my... my people, that let's do that work because I am sure the Americans will come out with an experiment and get the priority of
it. Why did you think the Americans rather than the British?
Not the British.
The
I never told the British because I knew the British have been. The British took or put in everything what they had just to win the war. But America was quite different.
Economically, that, was able to...
Yeah. You know, I was, before that, I was once in this country in 1931. And I saw that richness and that in everything you are, how should I say, you get or you possess much more than it is just required for living. You have an excess.
Yeah, an abundance of all kinds.
So I was pretty sure if anybody, then the Americans.
And of course you were right. And the Russians, you told me before we started taping, you felt they didn't have much radar capability at all. They were using mainly American Lend-Lease equipment and so forth. So you didn't think that they would be able to do very much. Well, now can you tell me, you say that it was basically a period of 6 months before you had your first attempts at the moon reflection.
Yeah.
And were there any particular difficulties as you did this, or was it pretty straightforward how you wanted to build it and just took time?
It were difficulties because at that time we didn't have, for example, electricity.
Sort of fundamental.
Nothing was smooth at that time.
But were they
the
all...
whole life... everything was just. We started an experiment, and after 10 minutes, we lost the electricity. Now, how can you work among such circumstances?
So it sounds like the difficulties then were not really the usual experimental difficulties in trying to solve this and that problem. They were all practical.
Supply.
Right, they were all practical difficulties.
Practical. Yeah,
you knew clearly how you wanted to go about doing it,
right?
And you didn't run up against roadblocks as to how to carry out this experiment next. Did you build the antenna especially for this purpose?
Especially for that.
And was it much more much higher gain antenna than you had for any of the military purposes?
It was 36 dipoles, and you can see in the publications the characteristic of the.
Right, but was it a much higher gain antenna than you had used for any of the military experiments? Or?
It was about the same.
About the same.
About the same. And the energy was also about the same, something like 3 kilowatts.
Was it out of the question to try to go for more more powerful transformer?
Not at that time.
Transmitter?
No, not at that time.
I mean, it was out of the question, you mean?
Only that the principle of integration was helping.
Right.
Now, later on, you know that nowadays every radar astronomy uses the integration.
Yes, sure.
Without exception.
Well, of course, it's a basic technique in radio astronomy also.
Right, yes.
Well, let me ask then about the 2 months between the first attempt and the final successful attempt. What were the problems that you had to work out in during that period?
What I told
just
you.
Practical,
just practical.
I mean, just to get a long enough period of time where you had the integration, everything was working all right.
That's right, And, well, of course, there were difficulties like at that time food was very scarce in Budapest, and it was very hard to keep together a team. Actually, I had to arrange for their feeding, and since our experiments have been done in night time, in order to have less noise,
right.
They had also, it had to be arranged that they had sleeping quarters
so
there at the factory and so on.
Once again, a lot of domestic problems to worry about. One thing you mentioned was that that the coulometer method you thought was less sensitive to interference than other methods. I think that I can't find that statement here, but I thought you made that statement, and I didn't quite see why that would be. Do you remember that statement?
No, I...
Maybe I misread it. Let's see.
Probably you did, because...
It would be subject to interference.
Actually, it's an accumulation
right.
of signals.
Another question I wanted to ask you was, it looked like the final statistical significance that you were willing to accept as a positive detection was about 4-to-1 signal, 4-to-1 four standard deviations, something like that.
Yeah. Yes.
I was wondering what made you stop there. Was it just getting? Has that always sort of been your acceptance level, or?
Yeah, I think that was rather standard. They say in general, they say three standard deviations.
If one is very sure about the noise characteristics of
yes.
the receiver, of
yeah.
course.
Yeah.
But you did do a lot of null experiments.
Right, yes. Yeah. Those are all written in the paper.
Now, another question is that by the time you had written up this article, you had heard about the American success.
Yes.
And also a newspaper account that the Russians had also done it. Now,
but that was only newspaper.
Right, right.
No scientific.
I have never found any scientific article about
yeah.
that. But when did you actually learn about the American success?
I think at the end of January.
So it was before
yeah.
you. It was right in the middle of your attempts.
Right. Yes.
And then just a few weeks later, you were successful. Now, all you heard, I guess, though, was that they had done it. You had no technical information.
All that. Yeah.
No, right.
Nothing in techniques.
By the time you wrote this article up, though, you did have a couple. You had this electronics.
Not very much either. I don't remember now, but I think it was only in something in electronics.
Right, right. You had enough to make an estimate
yeah.
of their yeah. signal versus yours, anyway, to make
yeah.
a rough estimate.
Because their paper, their detailed paper, came much later,
right.
2 years later or
right.
so.
And another thing I wanted to ask you about was the choice of the Hungaria Acta Physica publishing. I noticed that it's volume 1, page 1. There must be a story
yeah.
about that also. Could you tell me why you chose?
Well, the Hungarian Academy at that time was reorganized. Before the war, there have been rather many old people in the Academy. And so it was some sort of a revolution was
right.
done also there.
Right.
And then at that time, that Hungarian Physica Acta was started. And then it was a...
And you played a major role in this reorganization
yeah,
and so
yes,
forth.
Yes, right. I was chairman of one of the sections.
And so you thought this would be a good way to start this new journal off.
Yeah.
Indeed it was. And you published in English, I suppose, so you would have a broader
oh, yeah,
audience.
Yeah.
Bay also told me that he did know about Jansky's and Reber's published works in the open American literature, but had never contacted them through correspondence or anything like that. And also that his answer about how could he put together equipment so fast without any spare parts was not quite correct, in that there were a lot of military 2.5 meter radars scattered around the country, and he could get spare parts from them, and that's why they did the experiment at 2.5 meters, basically, because they had developed this unit before. So that's the end of the interview with Zoltán Bey on 1 October 1980 at his home in Chevy Chase, Maryland.